Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 27th, 2005. Today's session, Liberian Women Rebuilding Their Communities, presented by Lima Bowie in the Fireside Room, disc number GBL 2005-03. Let's listen in.
In Liberia, and I got a whole bunch of questions from how long it took to do my hair.
So, different kinds of things, and there was this one young man who kept asking me questions about the economy, which was strange for a 13, 14 year old. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him, do you want to be a businessman? He said yes, or I'll either be a businessman or go into government law. I said, now I see why you are so interested in the economy. Because all of his questions went in that way. How did the war affect the economy? What happened to the basic infrastructure? Mm-hmm. And then some of them have their own little ideas on the American population being spoiled, and they thought they were spoiled also. Yeah.
Well, my daughter told me to come tonight.
She was one of those.
She said, well, you have to go. It's about women.
That was the most difficult session I had, because I prepared more than 10 times. I couldn't figure out, what am I going to say to this group of young people? And then every one of them came like reluctantly. It's like we're just doing this for Lindsay, or we're doing this because we have to. This other little boy was like this when we met up at the app. And someone said, what happened to you? He said, I'm sleeping. And I'm like, wow, how can I beat sleep today? Well, afterwards, he was alert, and we had a very good exchange, which was really very good. And I told him a story that till today I still feel bad about. Last December, Christmas time, we went to shopping. And because we're talking about young children and one of the economic questions, and then my friend and I have bought a lot of stuff, and we're going back to the car. And this is a very busy market area. And these two little boys, one is about 12 and the other one is about 9, they have their little basket. They're selling biscuits. And about 9-year-old one had an empty box. And then he's saying to his older brother in our local, one of the dialects that I understand also, and my friend could understand, he said to his brother, I thought you said to me that if I finish selling my share of the biscuits, you buy me a pair of slippers. Both of them were barefooted. Mm-hmm. And then his brother said to him, why are you doing this now? We have to save some of this money for food on Christmas Day. I have to make sure I buy something new for you to wear. And now you are making all of this noise about slippers. Why are you doing this? And then the younger one started crying. But as we listened to them, we kept moving. And then I went and sat in the car, and I felt so sorry for these young people. I don't know if you've ever been in that state of sorrow where you forget to do the right thing. You know, and the right thing was to put my hand in my purse and give this little boy of $50 Liberian, which is like 25 US cent to buy a pair of slippers. But we just kept looking, and then when I drove off, it was like the spell was broken. Then my friend said to me, we should have bought the slippers, and we turned around and went back. We couldn't find the two young people. So one of the little girls said, to just think, a quarter or 50 cents to buy someone a pair of slippers, and that they had to work all day, it made her sad. And I said, well, the intention of this session is not to make you sad, but to rather encourage you to appreciate your parents more, to appreciate your society more, to appreciate all of the opportunities that you have more. Because sometimes young people, you tend to think that smoking is cool, and doing drugs is cool, and being like this is cool, and going with gang is cool. But I tell you, there are young people out there who wish they had your opportunity, so make every use of it. Well, they started getting uncomfortable because I was sounding more like mommy now.
Mommy.
But I think I had a very good interaction with those six kids afterwards. Yeah. Okay, today is our final session, and I really must commend this group because you've been following, some of you, from day one. I wish I had brought something to share with the faithful ones. Now in Liberia, most of the war-torn communities, they have this thing of making crosses out of the bullet shell. Mm-hmm. Tongwit from ELCA has a lot of that. If you ever went to any of the global missions event of ELCA or encounter some of the pastors, just ask them. I didn't bring any of those, but they do have those little ones that they tend to give away. It's our symbol of hope. Turning weapons of evil into a symbol of hope. And for most people in the community, they have one of the very big crosses here made from that according. But I think they took it somewhere. So today we are going to do rebuilding our community. Talk about some of the issues that women are currently involved in. And if you were not here from the first day and you need some clarifications and questions on Liberia, where it is and what it's about, because this class has been following from day one. So we had history session on the first day and all. But I did a map here because some of the issues that we'll talk about today has a lot to do with some of these countries around. This is Liberia. We have 15 counties, and we are bordered by Sierra Leone, Guinea, Ivory Coast, and the Atlantic Ocean. And we have very porous border. To go to Sierra Leone, you can pass through 1, 2, 3 counties. To go to Guinea, you pass through 1, 2, 3 counties. To go to Ivory Coast, 1, 2, 3 counties. Mm-hmm. So most of the wars that have been going around West Africa just come from around these four countries. What have women been doing in terms of rebuilding their communities? Immediately, I spoke about the signing of the peace agreement in 2003, August. As soon as we went back in August 2003, we called a meeting of all of the organizers and all of those who had been involved in the protest. We said, what do we want to do now that we've achieved the three things that we're initially asking for? Unconditional ceasefire, dialogue between the rebels, and the intervention force, because the troops were coming in now. The women said, we don't want to go back home and sit and relax. Usually when you sit and relax on peace agreement, they tend to go way off. We want to be there to see what is happening. But then because our network is a network of a lot of women that have not been to school, our task now was to take the peace agreement and simplify it. Meaning those areas in the peace agreement that was crucial to the peace and security of the nation, we had to make it simple. So in September 2003, with funding from the UN, we had a 3-day working session with 80 women from several of these counties, because at the end of the day, we expected that they were going back to carry what they had learned about the peace agreement. We told them between December 2000, so what we basically did was to break the peace agreement down by timeline and benchmarks. So between December 2003 and December 2004, we should have had the demobilization, meaning all of the combatants should have disengaged, and they should have been, their arms should have been taken from them, and we'll be looking for a place to put them. So, and then afterwards, during that period, we are supposed to see something like reintegration, going back into the communities. So that meeting in September 2003 basically told the ordinary Liberian woman for the first time what the peace agreement was all about. At the end of that meeting, the women decided we will continue to monitor the peace agreement. We will continue our sit-ins where we are, and we'll continue to look, watch from within our communities. So they continue monitoring the peace agreement. By November 2003, communities started coming to us and saying to us, we have young men and women that have been fighting in our community, but they are afraid to come out to go to be disarmed. Can you mothers take our children? That's how we got involved. But prior to the whole beginning of the disarmament, the whole process of disarming the combatants, we went to the UN and said, we've seen a lot of expats. They brought in a lot of people from Kosovo, from Russia, from the USA, from other countries, and said, these were the experts in disarmament. We said, in as much as you have all of these people that have the theoretical knowledge of how to disarm fighters, we are the locals, we have the local knowledge, and we want to be involved in the process. We don't want any pay, we want to be there, because if this thing fails, we will be the ones that will feel it. And they dismissed us. Every other way we went, we talked, and no one listened to us. On December 7, 2003, we went to one community in Montserrat to take 80 combatants to be disarmed. We had two pickups and one jeep. Took these young men, and they had their weapons over our heads, and they were chanting peace songs, and we were going because we had our peace t-shirts. By that time, that t-shirt meant peace. And we got to the military barracks. What we saw, thousands of combatants brandishing weapons, UN peacekeepers standing behind barbed wires. And in one section of the area where they were to disarm these young people, they were selling every kind of drug you could think about. And these fighters were getting high, and they were taking coke, and they were smoking marijuana. When we got there, I went to the guy in charge and said, we've brought some young people from our community to be disarmed. So obviously, because they came as an organized group, we bypassed the line and went ahead. Some of the other young men came to us and said, we've been standing here since 6 a.m. No one has given us water. And these were some of the issues that we raised with them, that local people needed to be involved so that we could talk to church groups to bring water and snacks and everything so that these young people have to, no one listening. As we were standing there, some of the quote-unquote expats, this little boy about 9 years old went to one of the tables to be disarmed. He presented a pistol. And the woman asked him, who did you fight for? He said, I fought with Lerd. That was one of the warring factions. Where did you fight? He said, in Grand Gide. Lerd came through Guinea into Lofa. Grand Gide is southeast. She signed him on and took his weapon and said, go. One of the older women standing by us went back and told this little boy, come back. Where did you fight? She said, if you don't talk, I will slap you and one of your teeth will drop. Where did you fight? He said, I didn't fight. My brother gave me the gun to come and beat his arm because of the $300 that they were giving for every weapon they were presenting. Mm. So we called the guy in charge and said, this is exactly what we were saying. These people don't have any idea of the map of Liberia, of the local things and everything. This little boy, then afterwards, one of them said, can any of you women please come and fill in at this table? We didn't say anything, we just stood there watching them. Less than 2 hours later, the fighters got disgruntled. They started shooting. People started running helter-skelter. Everything that we had predicted would happen started happening. The UN sent in helicopters and all of the expats were flown all of the barracks, and we, the local people, were standing there. The 80 combatants that we had taken to be disarmed went back and collected their weapons and came and encircled us and said they were protecting us. They took us out of that barracks and went. And for 3 days, there was shooting and killing in Monrovia. So it started on Sunday. Monday morning, we started calling all of the generals that we knew. And then one of the generals called, he always calls me Big Sister. He said, I'm having a meeting of all of the generals at my house now. If you can drive through the shooting and come, that would be good. So we took our t-shirts, we put it on, got in one old car, drove, and as we were going, we saw the general's convoy coming to the UN. We stopped. And then I said, we started talking and said, this is wrong. We need to do something because people were really dying. These fighters were now going into homes and they were looting and they were raping again, killing right in the capital. And the UN had taken a position of no retaliation. So while we were in this exchange, we decided let's put an announcement on the radio, calling women to a mass meeting. We call a mass meeting, issue a press statement listing almost 10 things that the UN did wrong. Immediately afterwards, the UN ambassador, who was an American at the time, American general, called me and said, the public information officer called me and said, Ambassador Klein wants to see you. And then I went to his office and he said, since you Liberian women know everything about disarmament, you have our blessing, go out there and calm the boys. We took this as a challenge. We went into the camps, and the first day, the way we did it was we sent 50 women in. And then we were like 10 who stayed in the office, and we sent them with 2 cell phones. So as they encountered the boys and tried to talk to them, every issue they raised, they would call and say, call so-and-so general, the boys are saying X, Y, Z. Because we had formed a network with the generals at that time. So we'll call this general and say, general, you need to send this other person in the barracks, and this person will go. And after the first day, the boys relaxed. They said, these women are people we can trust, because if they say, I'm calling this person, they call them and they are here immediately. By the third day, everything was calm. And most of my 50 women that have gone in there had gotten one fighter who said, I want to marry you. But if you read, there is an article that was written, I contributed to it, by UNIFEM. Doing it right and getting it right. If you went to the UN UNIFEM website, in that article, they talk about how we went in there and calmed the situation. Afterwards, the UN asked if we could take a contract to go into communities to be involved in the entire disarmament process. That's how the women now became involved in the disarmament process in almost all of the counties of Liberia. We send people in to do. So as part of rebuilding our community, we thought it was our obligation to be involved in the collection of weapons. Disarmament is the collection of weapons of the fighters. Most often when we went into communities to talk to these fighters, to turn over their arms, their key concern was, will we be accepted in our communities again? Because some of the worst atrocities they committed in their communities. And the guns was a sure way for them to not be prosecuted. Yesterday we talked about the TRC, so they still had that power, the gun. So we encouraged them to turn in their weapons. And by the time these boys turned in their weapons, the first problem we started encountering, everything that the UN had said they gave them was not forthcoming. So this morning, I had just come back from one of my numerous trips, and I went to greet the women where they usually sit to pray. Then one of them came and said, they called me, man, you have to come. The boys have started rioting in town. We went in town, met a whole group of them, and they were throwing stones at UN peacekeepers, and UN peacekeepers were sending tear gas. They were taking them and doing all sorts of things. So I went to the peacekeeper and said to him, the commander, just wait 1 minute while the women were talking with the boys, we'll get them out of here. And he said, I don't see how anybody can get these animals out of here. We've been on this since this morning. We said, just wait. So we encouraged the boys and said, just come along with us. Let's listen. And some of them remembered us from in the camps. So they said, okay, these women are reliable. They are trustworthy. Let's follow them. We went, we sat, we had a meeting. They went and made a long statement, and then we took it to the executive mansion. After the statement was presented to the vice president, we left. 2 days later, they started paying. But before they could start the payment, we went to a meeting with the president. These combatants are sitting here, the government officials sitting here, and we are there. And the president said, I'm going to jail all of you young men for misbehaving. And these boys are just like looking at him. And then they say, sir, would you please give us a chance to explain? No, I don't want to hear anything. The UN told me they started paying you people. And sure, that's a lie. The UN told me they've done this, that's a lie. The UN told me, and he would not listen. So I said, Chair B, would you just please give, I don't want to listen to anything. Lima, you people are the ones that encourage all sorts of rioting in this town. And he went on. Afterwards, I said, sir, let's call the guy who's in charge of disarmament and the guy from the UN. All right, they call the guy. Then he said, call the people from the US Embassy, call the people from the European Union, call everyone, let them come to this meeting. And everybody came, sat down, stern-faced. Yes, Ambassador. Well, sir, even though we have all of the logistics in place, we haven't started paying the boys yet. The chairman got up and walked out of the meeting. But before he left, he turned around. Gentlemen, I'm very sorry. You all fix this before you leave this room. The next day, payment started, the boys were calm. So we had really made a mark with them. Every time we told them, we pulled through. Even in that day, to see the president took us 7 hours of sitting under the rain. He said he won't see us and we said we won't go. Finally, he got upset and said, let them come in. So that was how we were involved. When it came to the period of reintegration, in some communities, it was really, really helpful. We decided we'll do one campaign. There is no bad bush to throw your child. That's a typical Liberian saying. No matter how bad your child is, you can never throw your child away. So we're saying there's no bad bush to throw your child. We got students, we had a big march, band, combatants, students, and everybody were chanting and singing, welcome your child back into the community. So some communities were willing. But there is this one community here where a lot of the young people have done so much. So they were living in the forest, and the people were living in the town. And the town people were saying, you are not coming back here. So the Catholic Church asked us to go in because they were based in that area. They are based there. We went there, we had a town meeting. I didn't go, we sent some of the other women. The way we did the meeting, town people one side, combatants one side, and then the women for peace in the middle. The priests and other religious leaders were there. So we asked them to really go through a time of sharing their true feelings. And mothers would stand up and point at their children and say, you did this, you did this. And afterwards, these young people stood up and said, you know, we did all that we did because you never consider us to be human beings. All of our growing years, and in Africa, it's a typical thing, a child should be seen and not heard. So children never really have any say in whatever community offers them. I remember growing up, if we had rice and fish that day, I said to my mom, I don't want rice and fish. She said, okay, wait till you grow up and you can have anything you want. If you don't eat it, you won't eat. You know? And then they still have this disciplining of caning and whipping, you know, real violently. So a lot of these young people were upset for the way the community took them, and that's the reason why they took up arms. And in most instances, when they took up arms, they became the law. So they wake up in the morning to humiliate some former government official. They will tell you, come and sweep my yard. Or take your wife as their wife. And then you are there and in that pain and agony. And sometimes for some of the women, they started having children. Because there were no. So it was really a lot of breaking of cultural norms and things. So people were like, you can't come back here. So after they had this exchange, the first day they had to go to sleep because it was on Saturday night. The next day, Sunday, they went back. And then the combatants relaxed their position a bit and said, sorry, we want to come back home. And we promise you that we will try to do everything in our will and power to make this community a happy place again. So the women accepted them. In that community members accepted them. Here, no one wants to have anything to do with combatants up to today. because it has a serious religious and ethnic thing about it. So you stay on your side, I'll pretend as if I didn't see you, and we'll stay on our side. That's the way they are living up to today. In some communities, reintegration has been possible. In Monsieur Rabbit here, where yesterday I talked about 250 young children that have been disarmed here, and they are supposed to go back to several of these counties. Their parents said, don't come back. We don't want you here. And so now they are out in the streets, in the capital, and they are street children. In this community, they really didn't have combatants per se. Most of the combatants came from here and came here. So now what these people are saying, no crown person will live in this Basa. So if you are crown, the other day they had a riot in that city, they burned down a lot of the houses that the new crown people were living in. This is a way of telling them, go back to your community. We don't have space for you here. More and more women groups are getting up and saying this is wrong. In this community, this is where one of the most serious ethnic conflict is, Nima. Few weeks ago, they had a reconciliation conference, and the Women for Peace were actively involved in that reconciliation conference. In that conference, people stood and looked each other in the faces and said to them, you people, because a lot of the people that migrated from Guinea and came here, their daughters were given to these Mandingos to marry. When they walk in, the war was between the Gios and the Mandingos. Now these people are saying to children that were born by Gio mothers and Mandingo fathers, you can't stay here. Mm-hmm. Their mothers are even saying to them, you are not my child. Mm-hmm. So, and these children are saying, if we vote in Guinea, we are not accepted. We are seen as Gios. In Liberia, we are seen as Mandingos. What do we do? But it is a serious, serious problem. I remember once we went there to do some peace celebration, and most of the Muslim women that went along with us, they had to take off their dress, the Muslim dress, and tie it around their waist. Because any of them could be lynched to death. It is so serious in that community, it's so thick. And when they went to that particular reconciliation meeting in Nima, a lot of the citizens who were advocating for the return of the Mandingos died mysteriously after the conference. So people want to believe that a lot of them were poisoned. That's how really difficult reintegration for certain groups are. Where are we involved in reconstruction? For reconstruction, it's difficult because people do not really have the kind of money to rebuild their homes. Some of the women from this little town, Bomi, they are all internally displaced in Monserrato. What do? The USAID have a project for clearing communities, communities that have been badly damaged. Prior to reconstruction, they call in a group of people, volunteers, who go and maybe do some brushing of the roadside and clearing of some of the burned down houses. They pay $3 a day. Most of these women from this area who are internally displaced leave from the displaced camps on Sunday night and go into their original community to work for 5 days for $3. So while they are working for $3 a day, then they have people making mud bricks to rebuild their homes. So this is the way that they are involved. This is the way they are involved in the reconstruction. And in other communities now, women are involved. Everywhere we go, as part of our advocacy campaign, we ask the local government authority to make provisions for jobs for the women, especially in terms of the sad version of the roads. And now USAID has enforced it as a policy that every area where they are doing such a work, there should be a balance, 50% women, 50% men. So that's the way people are getting income to rebuild their home. That's the way women are getting income. And some of them are using some of the income generated from here to start small-scale business and things like that. The second point, in terms of rebuilding our community, we are involved in civic education. as a result of 15 years of civil war, a lot of us didn't know, still don't know our civic rights and responsibility. I remember the first time we had a workshop for some of the women who are quote unquote educated. When I asked them, what is civic education? One of them said, it's related to voting. So, I mean, afterwards I knew we had to do the basic for these women. So, what we've done now is to, and not just us, but a lot of other groups are involved in civic education, civic roles and responsibilities, because people still believe that everything that should happen should either come from donors or come from the government or come from the UN. They don't see, they are still detached from the reality of rebuilding, from the reality of rehabilitation, from the reality of reconstruction. So the message that we take out is that it is our role and responsibility to make sure that certain things happen in our community. For example, right now, Monrovia is one of the dirtiest cities in West Africa. People do not have any sense of responsibility for keeping the city clean. They will eat and throw it out of the window. A few weeks ago, we were driving, going to a meeting, and this guy is driving one of the SUV, 2004 model, tinted glass, everything, and he flunks a banana peeling out of his car, wind down his windshield, flung it out in front of the central bank that is sparkling clean, one of those areas that we can boast of being clean. My aunt said, stop the car. Then he stopped and was talking with someone. She got down, went and stood in front of her car and said, get down and pick up that banana peeling. He said, get out of my way. She said, you will get down and pick up that banana peeling. He said, no, I won't do it. Who are you to tell me? And then you know who I am, that's the big thing. I'm a government official. In case, she said, you are the silliest government official I've ever seen. Get down. And this whole argument, then all of the street boys started going, yes, 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 yes. One of his friends said to him, get down and pick it up, or else you will be lynched. Because the next thing that was going to happen, those boys would have taken him out of his car, burned the car, and beat him senseless. He got down, picked the oyster, now put it in your dirty car. And he was mumbling something, and these boys went, boo, boo, boo. But no ordinary person who has not gone through that process of knowing a civic role and responsibility would have done that. They see it as, it's none of my business. I should not be involved in this kind of thing. And afterwards, everyone saw her as a hero. Ooh, you are so brave, Oman. But that is what we are supposed to do. It is our business to keep our environment clean. So we try as much as possible to go out there to give this kind of messages. So sometimes we put like 200 women out in the street giving these kind of messages to people. Voters registration started May 15th. And people should have gone to register to vote. Again, because of apathy, because government had never benefited the civilian population, people were like this. We were accredited in August by the National Elections Commission to go and do civic and voters education in this entire county. By January, we had sent our proposal to the UN, who was funding the work, so that our team could go in to start the work. We didn't hear from them. February, we didn't hear. March, we didn't hear. By the end of March, I called up the guy and said, why are we not yet giving any funding to go into NEMA to do our work? This is the guy from the UN. Well, Ms. Bowie, you know, because of the level of work that you do, you are so stretched out in different places doing different things. We don't think you have the capacity to do this work. So really, he said yes. Okay. That day, we had an invitation to go to one of the farewell dinner for one of the UN personality. And I said to someone, I'm not going to this dinner. But after that telephone conversation, I said, I'm going. I dressed up nicely, went to the dinner, and went to the ambassador, the UN ambassador, and said, hi, Mr. Ambassador. Oh, Lima, it's so lovely to see. Do you know Lima? Lima is the peace. Lima, how's your work? Well, Lima, your work is spreading like cancer. And this guy could talk. This American is a real talker. Oh, Lima, work is spreading like cancer. Lima is so powerful. Lima, is everything okay or do you have any problem? I'm sure the UN is supportive of your work. I said, no, Mr. Ambassador, what? I said, well, today we just got told by the UNDP that we didn't have the capacity to do civic and voters education in Lima County. That's
he took out his cell phone. Cleophas. Yes, sir. What's happening to Whitney proposal, sir? I want it done. It couldn't be done because they had given it to a male-dominated NGO to do. Mm-hmm. But I said, I was not going to rest. Finally, they decided as a way of vengeance, they gave us this county in a little county here called Grand Cru that is inaccessible during the rainy season. And this is the peak of the rainy season to go and do civic and voters education. I was in South Africa at the time. My assistant called me and said, these people have punished us. I said, why? They're giving us Maryland and Grand Cru to do. I said, Lindora, she said, yes. I said, see this as a challenge. Fine. If you have to find a truck and let's go in there. They went in there and the UN was paying for 100 women. By the time we got into those two communities, almost 500 women volunteered to help us do the work. Mm-hmm. Wow. By the time we came out of that area, Civic and Voters Education had 5 days to end in Monrovia. My day of reckoning is here. 5 days to the end of Civic and Voters Education, the same guy from UNDP calls me, Lima, I need to have a meeting with you. Why, Cleophas? Well, you know, in Monserrato, we have a very low turnout of women going to register to vote. And we thought, given the wonderful work you've done in the Southeast, you know, maybe we could do something quick to spark up the women's interest in voting to go to. And he went on, I said, yeah, so you want to see me? He said, yes. I said, well, Cleophas, come to think about it, because it's you now wanting something from me, come to my office for the meeting. He said, okay, I'll come. They came to my office and they talked about the low turnout of women in 10 communities that they identified. In these 10 communities are communities where women are the breadwinners. They are the ones who do a lot of the businesses in those communities, so they were not turning out to vote. So after we had that meeting, we decided the strategy was we put out 200 women, 20 each of the communities, to encourage people to go and register to vote, women specifically. We went into those communities, what did we do? Hello, can I see your left thumb? Because that's where they were marked. You haven't registered, why? Well, I don't have anyone to take care of my market while I go to register. Okay, can I stay by your market while you go to register? Check all of the money you've made for the day. And so like that, we went from one house to the other, braiding hair, washing clothes, cooking, taking care of babies, carrying babies on our back for 5 days. And at the end of the day, we registered 7,425 individuals. Yeah. And last week, I was in New York. I went to UNIFEM office and said, Sarah, did you see the report from the Civic and Voters Education on what the magic we played for the last day? She said, yeah. Now the UN is saying that it was their idea, they did it. Well, I said, say what? Did they give me any credit in that report? She said, yes, they did. I said, or else I was ready to go and raise hell. But in terms of civic and voters education, this is what we're doing. The UN office has an office for the gender advisor of the United Nations mission. And what we've been doing also as part of our campaign, going out into communities and encouraging women to run for positions. But then it's also difficult in some of those communities where you still have a very strong patriarchy structure. Some communities are encouraging women, but other communities are saying to women, step aside, it's not yet time. But more and more we go out there, and then we have programs, capacity building workshops, leadership training for a lot of women to really bring out some of those things and spark their interest. The third thing, this is our biggest work, advocacy and lobbying. We love it to get the women issues into the electoral law. Right now, we do a lot of lobbying around issues of justice. We still have a lot of assault cases that goes unpunished, especially government officials. They feel that they are law upon themselves, so they can get down and slap you if you pass your car in front of them some kind of way, or they will park their car in the middle of the street to keep a conversation and hold up traffic forever. And then you get down and say, well, someone will insult you, or someone will just, some bodyguard will slap you. And the latest case we are working on now is with this woman who was 9 months pregnant. She lived next door to a deputy minister of one of the government ministries. And this woman woke up one morning and, because it's the rainy season, took some sandbags and laid around her house to block the water from washing away her foundation. This guy said it was going to destroy his property, so she needed to remove the sandbag. And she said, no, you can do likewise. Take sandbag and put it in. He said to the woman, I don't have the time. So he ordered his boys to take her sandbag and put them against his house, and then that she should go and find another sandbag to put to her house. She said this was not going to happen. When she tried to move the sandbag, this guy beat that woman sound and senseless and stripped her naked like the day she was born. She came, someone in the community, and no one in the community could say anything, because there is word out that this guy has some magical powers and he will kill anyone instantly. So everyone is afraid. Finally, someone slipped my telephone number in her hand. This day I'm sitting and someone called. Oh, they say one of these ministers beat this woman. And blah, blah, blah. I said, well, I am overcrowded with work. Let this woman go to the justice ministry. She came the next day to my office and said, she explained her story. I really didn't take it to be anything. I said, okay, I gave her the address of the female lawyers and said, go to these women, they will help you, blah, 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 blah. And then 1 week later, she didn't go. She kept, because someone said to her, those female lawyers are not the ones that will help you. It's those women for peace. They are the ones that can help you. She came and then she sat and told her story. All the really tiredness that this woman, I gave me my peace. I said, okay, let me listen to her. Listen to her and say, okay. She said, well, I will come back tomorrow. That day, she went home and she went into labor. She went to give birth and she gave birth to a stillborn baby. Every part of this baby was broken as if someone had done this. By the time her sister came and told me, I was interested now in the case. So we decided, let's go to the justice ministry. The sister said, it's not going to work. They had taken this guy to court, and because of his ministerial position, he could not be summoned. The only person who could help us was the president. The president had to suspend him for time indefinite before the law could take its course. So we had to go for the first hearing in the office of the president. I didn't trust my emotions. So I told the women to stay, and I went out. It was good, because he came and said, where is the, excuse the expression, bitch, that is the leader of these peace women? I'm going to show her myself. And then one of the older women said, praise the Lord, because the man would have slapped this guy and they would have fought. But one of the other ministers kept saying to us, be calm. Because by the time the news hit the women out in the communities, they said they were going to buy canes, over 100, and they were going to his office and beat him senseless. But they kept saying, calm down, calm down, calm down. We went for the first hearing, and they kept playing with us, and the justice minister came. He said to them, he had traveled to Saudi, and he came back and met this case. And by that time, the press was carrying it on a daily basis. He said, is there a proof of assault? Did this guy touch this woman? And the other ministers said, yes. He said, then why are we waiting? What are we waiting for to suspend him? We shouldn't be looking for a medical report by virtue of the fact that he raised his hands at her when she was 9 months pregnant. We should suspend him. So the week before I came, he was suspended, and the charge was assault and murder of an unborn child. So the case is pending, but this is a case that we are not going to relent on. So after he called me a bitch, I also went and took one of the human rights lawyers as my lawyer, and I'm suing him. As soon as it comes out of that case, it meets my case. So in terms of abortion justice issue, rape is at its peak, and especially rape of little children. So right now, along with the justice minister, there has been no law for rape in Liberia. We've just developed a law, and in September we'll start taking it to parliament to see how it can get passed into law. Governance, we staged a lot of protests and meetings. Few months, in April we had 2 weeks of assessment in all of the government ministries to verify allegations of corruption, and they really, really came out to be true. because we just go to one of the offices and ask the ministers of government. They are really welcoming to the peace women. Can we have a time of chat with you? And some of them will be more than willing. And there were a lot of disparities between the Commerce Ministry and the Finance Ministry in terms of the prices of basic commodities, why they were going up. And after we had compiled our report, we passed it on to another human rights group. And this group, along with the women, staged a protest for 3 weeks in April for ECOWAS to send an audit team. And the team came in and they did their audit, and several ministers of government have been suspended for time indefinite. One of them is the Bureau of Maritime Commissioner, Maritime, the shipping lines, like you carry a lot of flags for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's being investigated now for 700,000 euro. That's what he stole. So this is more or less what we're doing. In terms of also the justice issue, women in the rural areas are really involved in it. There's this community here in Bonn in terms of reintegration. Some of the fighters had come out of the bush and they had their hair braided with earrings and their beards braided because they had to look fearful when they were fighting. And the women, they said they wanted to come into town. The women said to them, the only way you come to town, unless you allow us to cut your hair and shave your beard. And they agreed. So when they did their report, they sent it to my office, they said, we had a day of cutting hair. So they did, and afterwards, most of the fighters came to town. There is a little village here where we've been working. We've translated our peace building manual into three of our local languages, and these women have really been working for peace. Two young men left from here to go to Guinea, a bordering town here, to do business, and somehow, some people in that community decided these were two Liberian rebels, and they lynched these two boys to death. Mm. So there was a lot of tension between this village and this little village across the border, because they depended on each other for certain things. So no one was coming from here to here, no one was coming from here to here. Local government officials had gone there, and they couldn't do anything. So the peace women in that community decided, they told the commissioners, can we go? And the commissioner said, why? He said, we want to go and talk to the mothers on that side so that they can know how we feel. Because these two boys were killed and their bodies were laying down for 3 days, and the Guineans were saying they should not be buried. So they went in and sat with these women and talked, asked them questions. If these two boys were your child or were your children, would you want their bodies to rot? Afterwards, the women from that community decided that their government should be responsible for a decent burial of these two young people. And afterwards, the border area was open and there's a real good relationship. So these are just a few examples of what we're doing. If I say we don't have challenges and we don't face a lot of frustration in our work, I'll be telling a big lie. Sometimes it's really very difficult. You get to a particular place where you think you are making headway, and then nothing's happening afterwards. You know, so it's a tough thing. And one of the key problems that we face most of the time is logistics. We have two buses and one Jeep for our work, and the demand on those three cars are so great because we are in 9 of these 15 counties. Most of the time, women have to walk great distances, especially where they are creating awareness in the communities on different issues. Once one of them came and said, see my leg, it's all swollen, but I don't mind because it's for the cause of peace. If I would sit in my hut peacefully and not have to move to another country, I don't mind the sacrifice that I'm making now. But it's really, really tough. And sometimes, like one woman said to me, and those are some of the frustrating moments for me, why am I building peace? Because they are going into the community to do awareness on voting day. And as soon as she got in the market area, she had a smile on her face, handing a leaflet to this young man. And when he showed his hand and looked in her face, that was the killer of her only son. Mm-hmm. She dropped everything, started crying, and ran off. He was shocked because he had killed so many persons, he couldn't remember that woman anymore. Right now, another one of the predicaments we're faced with is that this woman had two children, her daughter and her son. Her daughter left Liberia and went to Ghana. Her son stayed. Her son was killed by this boy. And after a while, the boy left Liberia and went to Ghana. Got married to her daughter.
Oh,
they
no.
have two children. Oh. The girl is supposed to be returning home with her husband and children. The mother has seen the picture. She remembered this guy. What do I do? How do I tell my daughter that she's married to the killer of her brother? So these are some of the challenges in our community rebuilding efforts that we face on a daily basis. Honestly, when they brought that case to me, I said, I don't know. I really, because they are so happy, according to people who have seen these two couple, they are so happy, happily married. She knew this guy participated in a war, and for her, it's okay, you know, but to what extent? She doesn't know, and they have two children. So the mother is really, really in a predicament. When these two people come back, how do I receive my daughter, my grandchildren, and the killer of my son? So these are some of the challenges that we face on a daily basis as part of the work. I tell everyone I'm good in advocacy, I'm good in going to lobby for issues, but when it comes to mediation, in peace building, I'm limited. So I try to stay away from that component of the work most of the time because I don't know how to mediate. And it's good to know your weakness, because for me, the way to cut that case is, you are the killer of this, that would be a disaster. Anyway, I'll stop here for now. If you have any questions. Yes, sir.
I'm curious about the status of the media, and I'm just wondering how well your work gets known, and I realize that literacy would be a problem. I don't know what, you know, radio, TV coverage might be, but I just wonder whether the people are learning about your work.
In Liberia, it is widely known. We are well respected. One of the reasons why I get so much invitations to go out in West Africa and to some meetings at the UN is because the press did a very good job with putting our stories out. But one of the real shortcomings that we have in this work that we do is the documentation aspect. If it had been North Americans and Europeans, from 2003, since we started up to today, there will be several books on several different, because there are different issues within the campaign that we're running that you could write 20 books out of. Just one person's story is a whole volume, you know? And sometimes we go through different things. I mean, there are times we go to places where we could do a comic book on some of the times that we go to advocate. We could also do a real sad novel about some of the times that we go to advocate. We could do a lot of things. But sometimes afterwards, the thing that really holds us together, and we have a real true sisterhood. We had this It Is Something Plus woman with us. She had been there from the day one. And I didn't know this woman has such pride in our work. She died last week, Tuesday. She had stroke, and they took her to the hospital. As soon as the woman came to tell me, we got in the car, when we got there, her sisters were sitting. As soon as we enter, she couldn't speak, she had slipped into a coma. And I said, hello. She said, hello, but the crowd was so large. And the sister said, I said, I'm Lima, and Mrs. Freeman. As soon as I said, I'm Lima, the sister started crying. She said, my sister will come home from peace activity and say to us, you people in this house don't know I'm important, but let me fall sick or let me die. You will see how many children I have. Say, just my daughter Lima alone will give me a decent burial. So while I was in New York, we were calling back and forth, and my friends were saying they had organized, and on a daily basis, this woman's house is so packed. And her family members are really now realizing that she was a part of something that was really cool. So we try to keep that connect. We try to make it to really look like true sisterhood. And forever I could be telling my children the stories about the work that we've done. Because we've cried together, we've laughed together, we've celebrated weddings together, we've gone to funerals of family members. This is the first time we are actually going to bury one of our own, you know. So we've really, really had some good times, and documentation is our problem. Yeah. I saw another hand. Yes.
I missed earlier sessions. Could you let us know, or those who just came, where you are from? What part of the country? Where's your home?
I'm here. I'm in Bong County, and I'm Pele. That's my local, my traditional language, Pele. And my name is Lewoma. That's the meaning of my name. My name is actually Lewoma. What is it about me? That's the meaning. Mm. My second daughter, we call her Nebango, meaning the beautiful, fair colored woman. So that's where I'm from. And that's where, if you ever heard of Phoebe Hospital, that's where Phoebe Hospital is. And when the Lutheran missionaries came, they settled in most of these areas. So that is, if you say I'm Pele, no one will ask you which church you go to. They assume that you are Lutheran by virtue of the fact that you are Pele or Loma. So you are Lutheran. If you say I'm Kru, it means you are Catholic. You know, different ethnic groups have different, because the churches divided the country. This whole area was the Catholic area. This area was the Assemblies of God. This area, United Methodist, this one muscle rather was divided. Up here was the Pentecostal, here the Anglicans. So the country, so if you say I'm from Cape Mount, they know you are Episcopalian or you are Muslim. Because this whole side is where the Muslim population comes from in Liberia too.
And when do you go back?
Next week, by this time, I'll be in my bed. I would arrive at 5:50, which would be like 10 o'clock holding time.
Do you leave tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow I'm going to, I have one other session in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the Summer Missionary Conference of the Lutheran Church. Sure. Together with one professor from the Eastern Mennonite University, we're doing reconciliation and justice with the missionaries. Their 3 days workshop. I saw your hand.
Have any men stood up with you?
Well, when we started our protest action initially, the men wanted to come. But because of the way the Taylor government saw men, you know, most often men are the ones that are seen as rebels, men are seen as troublemakers. And for the government, they really didn't bother us because we were seen as toothless bulldogs. You know, women issues are not really taken seriously. They say we'll get tired easily. You know, so they tried, but the way they stood by us was, especially some of the bishops and pastors going out and lobbying for funds. I always talk about the Catholic Archbishop. Unfortunately, he's sick now and he's at the Johns Hopkins. Lost his speech when he lost his mother, went into stroke and coma. But Archbishop Francis was always going to political parties and saying to them, you have to support these women's work. Because when peace comes, you will never remember them. As a matter of fact, they won't be acknowledged, and it's true. Right now, they are all scrambling for power. No one is looking back to see, you know, to say these were the people who brought us to where we are. So yeah, but right now, sometimes we get tired with them. After Taylor has left Liberia, it's a bit peaceful. When there are issues, then they come to us and say, what are you women doing? And sometimes we're going, they see us going a large group, then they took their car horns and say, God go with you. Yeah. Yes. So, yes, sir.
Has the Peace and Reconciliation Commission of South Africa been an influence and assistance?
Well, Bishop Tutu, the guy who was named as chairman of our Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Canon Burgess Carr. Canon Carr lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's an Anglican priest. Canon Carr worked closely with the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He's a very good friend of Archbishop Tutu. Unfortunately, Canon Carr did not take the appointment on grounds that the president is his half-brother. And he said people will interpret it to be something else. But in our discussion, because I do a lot of talking with Kamaka, Archbishop Tutu have shown interest in coming to Liberia and helping during the process. So Kamaka is ensuring that that happens along the way. Yeah. Okay. If we don't have any questions, I'll just sing the song we used to sing. Well, every time they heard this song, they knew the women were coming. Coming and coming for nonviolent war. That was during the peak of the crisis. So today, when some of the little children see the calendars and the pictures of us in our t-shirts and hair ties, they go, "We want peace, no more war." Because that's how we're known. Some of them call me, "We want peace, no more war." we sang like this. "We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. We tired dying, we want peace. We tired crying, we want peace. We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. Our children hungry, we want peace. Our husbands dying, we want peace. We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. Total peace, so everlasting peace, so no more war. We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. Oh, we tired crying, we want peace. We tired walking, we want peace. We want peace, no more war. We want peace, so no more war. So I think the American ambassador, when he used to go to bed, that song used to ring in his ears. Because we're constantly there. But that song went on CNN, it went on Euronews, it went on BBC, it went all over the world. That was the peace song. And every community has their own way of singing it. And this song just came up one day from the women. And we sing it, and it's the, like, typical Liberian English, because when we speak Liberian English, we say, "Oh, I want to do this, oh, I want to do that, oh, that's to put the emphasis, so we want peace, oh, no more war. Total peace, oh, no more war." That's to put the emphasis. I want to again say thank you. You've been a wonderful audience, and I hope you had a great time, and I really hope this is a learning experience for you. But I thought I would do one thing for you. This is a website that you can go on and follow elections news and news about Liberia. This is a Liberian owned, that's one of our local newspapers. So on a daily basis, they have stories, but they are developing a website called Elections Monitoring. So if you go there, once they finish building that website, you can read on it. www.allafrica.com has news on all of the African countries on a daily basis. So if you went, there is a little bar with the names of countries, and if you went down and click on Liberia, you also have daily news about Liberia. And when I'm out of the country, these are websites that I depend on to really give me news about who. They are fairly reliable.
Can you spell your name too?
Yeah, on my codex, yeah.
And this is my email, just in case you have a question. I'm on the Yahoo. And I am a computer crazy person. That's why I don't like coding very much.
Lima, what's the site you mentioned that has your article?
if you went to UNIFM,
yeah.
.org, if you even to show you how famous I am, if you went to Google and type my name, you read a lot of stories about the things that we've done. The first time I saw you, I went, wow! And then our own organization also wanted, the organization I work for, or sometimes one website is discouraging. Or you can read from here, www.oneapp.org. And we, my boss and I were in New York together last week, and he said, we're going to have a policy brief every week as of the first week in August on Liberia, the state of security, the state of the security in terms of elections, the security state of Liberia in terms of the elections. So if you went to any of these websites, you can read on Liberia, and you can read about some of the stories when you go to Google, how we barricaded the hall in Accra, some of the things that we've done, and things like that. If you have any question, like I have a chain of old ladies who last year I met, and sometimes when they're going to give little talks at churches in the US, they will write me and say, can you give me some pointers? And I do try to bounce back. Once I'm not traveling around Liberia, I always check my mail twice a day. That's why holding is hard.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.